He's on early today. Adam Pengilly, morning to you, mate. How are you?
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys.
Now, why has South Australian Racing been forced to close during the lockdown there in Adelaide?
Yeah, what a bizarre situation, Jared. I was news that South Australia's gone into lockdown from 7 days from last night. Now, unlike Victoria, New South Wales and other states which have been able to get an exemption to continue racing from the state governments during lockdown periods, Racing South Australia has been lobbying the South Australian government without any luck whatsoever. So basically, they've had to cancel racing for the rest of the week in South Australia at the moment. It's uncertain when racing will return, I suppose, depending on how long this lockdown goes for. And a lot of people are doing it really tough down there, and it's not great news to know that race means just called off at the drop of a hat, basically. So unfortunately, we know racing down in South Australia for the foreseeable future. Let's hope that can turn around very, very quickly.
What about with construction being stopped here in Sydney? Will that wing stand be open for the Everest, mate?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Laurie. Ray Thomas wrote in the Telegraph today saying that construction's obviously been halted on that wing stand for the next couple of weeks at the very least, hoping that ban can be lifted after our lockdown sort of supposed to end on July 30. I'm pretty sure that'll probably continue, but hopefully some exemptions for the construction industry. So that stand was hoping to be open in time for the Everest in mid-October. They're not quite sure about that now at the moment. Hopefully, maybe have the lower level of that grandstand open to allow a few thousand patrons into that stand. But at the moment, it's very much up in the air for the ATC and Racing New South Wales to get that stand open in time. And I suppose a lot of concerns about how many people will actually be allowed on track for the Spring Carnival heading towards some of those big feature races in a couple of months' time, pending how the virus is going in Sydney at the moment.
Yeah. Why are connections of Crone, a Group 1 winner, targeting the invitation?
Yeah, well, it's been a controversial announcement, hasn't it, Jared? But this is the effect it's going to have on a lot of our star mares and fillies and mares. Tony Gollan's come out in the last 24 hours saying that, hey, Crone's going to target this race now, the invitation. I think all roads were leading towards the Empire Rose Stakes down there at Flemington during the Melbourne Cup Carnival. But he said this race is much, much more suitable a week before that race. Obviously, 400 metres is probably her pet distance. She probably gets a chance of potentially wet ground up here in Sydney, where she probably won't get that down there in Melbourne. So he's virtually just changed her plans completely, and I'm sure this won't be the last horse or last connections we hear speaking about this. So I'm pretty sure the Coolmore Classic winner from the Autumn will get an invite for that race. She's going to have probably a final campaign in the spring and maybe a farewell appearance at Magic Millions, but she'll be targeting the invitation according to her trainer.
What do you like at Kenzo today?
Yeah, one bet for me, Laurie. I liked him on the weekend in a Saturday race on each way. Basically, he was scratched and saved for a Wednesday race. So I've got to be with Kinloch, race 4, number 7. He's a bit hard in the mouth with his racing style. Can get back and run on, but a smaller field here. Getting back to a Wednesday race, I think, is a much weaker race than what he was going to face there on the weekend. He's got that nice sort of fast coney form. So I think he's a really progressive horse. Happy to be with him. Race 4, number 7, Kinloch.
Yeah, got a stick. $3.10 is Kinloch as it stands with the tab at the moment. Mate, what do you make of it? And your colleague Christian Nicolussi writes in the Herald today about, well, the Panthers being now back in the hunt for a short-term deal for Tevita Pengai Jr. What's your thoughts on all this? I find it uncomfortable seeing a player of his ilk playing for 3 clubs in 6 months and to come in at this stage of the season to boost the Panthers just doesn't quite sit right. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I tend to agree, Jared. It's just strange, isn't it? Like, even we see a situation like Chad Townsend was sort of on the outer with Cronulla. He'd already signed for the Cowboys next year, and then he's off to the Warriors for a couple of months to finish the year. It just doesn't feel right, does it? I think it's a bit uncomfortable with me. No doubt he'd be a great pickup for the Panthers if they can get him. They're obviously lacking just a little bit of punch at the moment with Nathan and Jerome on the sidelines, and a few of their forwards coming out of that state of origin period with Liam Martin and Kurt Capel. So Pengai Jr. will be a massive asset for him. But I don't like this deadline being pushed back to August 1 or August 2. I think June 30 was probably about right. I don't know what Laurie thinks about it all. But, it's almost like a Milford as well. Milford's in the same boat as well with Parramatta. Parramatta were rumoured to be interested in him and purely just to help them get across the line into the finals and try and win a premiership. It just, I don't know. I'm a little bit uncomfortable about it. I'm an old traditionalist. If you start a season with one club, you really should finish a season with that club.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to go, Adam, you have to have your 30-man roster filled at the start of the year, and then you can make an exemption to the NRL if you lose players throughout the year and you've got money throughout the year to season-ending injuries and you've got money still left in your salary cap, then you can apply to go and chase a player. I don't mind that other than going into the season with 28, 29 players, having that position up for grabs so late in the season. If it's at 30 of June, I'm okay with that. But to leave it so close to the finals, I think it can be left open to, you know, accusations of, you know, people doing deals and things like that.
Yeah, just look at it from Brisbane's point of view, right? Like, they've got very, very little to play for the rest of the year. They're not going to make the finals, right? Tavita's on huge money. They can just save money in their salary cap by getting rid of him for the last four or five rounds of the regular season. The finals, the contracting period doesn't finish till the end of October. So from their point of view, it makes sense, doesn't it? There's obviously an incentive for this, for them to release him. So,
and they can use that money towards another player, exactly, maybe that they're looking to re-sign.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know. I sort of, the old June 30 was, I was a little bit uncomfortable about that, but now they've pushed it back to August 1. It just doesn't feel right yet. You're buying someone for four or five rounds of the regular season, the end of the season, then the finals. Like, you look at an American sport like baseball, boys. Like, their player trading system is so transient and so fluid. Like, a player can turn up for a game one night, and then by the end of the night, they've got to try to go home, pack their bags, and fly to somewhere else. We're moving to a system like that almost, aren't we?
Mm. Yeah. I guess the thing is, those American sports, they do have a very, you know, succinct trade deadline, and, you know, it's a reasonable time leading into the playoffs. So those squads are very much, whereas this, you know, I know it's changed due to COVID, but to go to August 1, have 1 month before the finals at another club potentially, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, good on you, mate. Have a good day.
Okay, see you, boys.
On the Kenzo today, he likes race 4, number 7, Kinloch, Adam Pengilly, $3.10. Just this text, Paranoid asks, hey, Loz, at the start of the year, you spoke about Will Penasini and what a good player he is. As a para-tragic and absolute sceptic about Brad Arthur, what should I expect with Penasini? Dynamic runner, great defender, speed, big bloke, small bloke, and he has been named to make his debut in first grade against the Raiders in the centres tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, he's a different build to, say, Joseph Suaalii. He's more compact and very powerful runner. Very powerful runner of the ball. I think he's got a right arm carry. Got decent footwork, but his power. He's just a strong ball carrier. And he's one of those players that, you know, will carry the ball forward. He's got a nice pass. And he's a player that, you know, obviously played with the King's School with Suaalii, played a lot of rugby union, but played league as well growing up. And I think he's someone that has developed quite nicely. And I think you'll see him as a runner. Mm. He's someone that can create opportunities through his running game. He can put a winger away, which you need for a centre. Like, you see so many centres faced with a 2-on-1 and they can't put their winger away, yet he's got a nice catch pass. And he's quite powerful in defence if you're running at him. You know, obviously as a centre, it's going to be challenging for him when numbers are coming at him to make the correct decision. But he stays in the system, which Parramatta like to go up and in. He'll handle it okay. But he's someone to look forward to.
Mm. Yeah, good player. Phil Moss is coming up next.